I succeeded. You know, some people out earn their need to do this kind of work, you know, and if that's the case, that's great. I say to those people, you're doing well, so congratulations. But I can say with almost 100% of surety, if you put time to this, you would actually be saving more of that money that you're making. And every time you save more dollars, you take off more, you know, months or days or years of work off the back end of your life.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big. Joe DeSanto has built multi-million dollar businesses, produced critically acclaimed documentaries, and an Emmy-winning TV show. He's invested millions in real estate and semi-retired at age 43. Now he's sharing a lifetime of fiscal know-how via Play Louder, which is an invaluable resource that helps individuals and business owners increase their net worth for a better life and a better future. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's happening, Sam? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less.
Come on me. Ooh.
90 seconds or less. Here we go.
All right. I'm going to do it.
Start? Where are you now? How'd you get there?
Okay. Well, started in Providence, Rhode Island. That's where I was born. Ended up in Los Angeles and started a post-production company, which achieved those accomplishments you mentioned in my great intro. Thank you. And now I live in Tampa, Florida area. We did our kind of exit our life as we know it. And I'm in sort of a semi-retired state now, which I can explain if you like.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And maybe we'll get into that as part of, you know, the topic, you know, of today is the logistics of living your best life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we kind of talked about that a little bit before we kicked off the show, but maybe you can just break down a little bit of your story and tell us what that means to you and how you got there.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, we're trying to live our best life and it's a daily effort, but it, you know, the logistics part is that it does take some effort to kind of be able to engineer what I think is, you know, your best life. And that can be, you know, a variety of things to everybody or different things to everybody, I should say. But in our case, I was always into, well, business amongst other things, real estate as well, and investing in personal finance, which we'll probably talk a little bit about. But long story short, after college, kind of get started in post-production biz in New York, moved to Los Angeles, but always wanted to own my own business and just had that on my radar, you know, as a very definitive goal. And luckily was able to achieve that in post-production, which I got into. I was actually oddly a photography major in college, photography, digital imaging, and really just had a passion for sort of finance, investing in personal finance that I, you know, always was pursuing. But post-production just happened to be a kind of business that was achievable, I think, you know, for me in terms of opening a business. It's not, you know, it's a kind of a niche industry, a boutique industry, and you can have a business that has anywhere from, you know, a few to a couple hundred employees, if you like, but it's not like trying to start, you know, some multinational company. So it fit in well to my plans and I was able to do it with my partners. I had three partners who really are my closest friends and we're still friends. And we set out on it and we accomplished it, but it took a lot of work. You know, running a business is hard. You know, it's like if you're owning the business, it's like you're doing your quote unquote job, but then you're doing a whole bunch of things on top of that. So it's time consuming, it's demanding, it can be stressful. Can also be super fun and super rewarding, which it was for me. But we eventually had a child and we didn't have kids till late. I was 40, my wife was 36. And because we really enjoyed our work. We enjoyed our career and we kind of lived our work, but it was really fun, you know, and we did a lot of socializing in our business. It's a social business. We hung out with our employees all the time. We were all honestly just friends and, you know, we worked a lot and then we went out a lot and it was a good time. But once we had a kid, we were like, wow, you know, this is kind of really stressful now. You know, it used to be like we could just do whatever we wanted, work as long as we wanted, if we needed to, whatever. And now it's like, wow, we're rushing to get home. You know, it's like we're trying to balance it all. The work demands didn't really decrease. So it became kind of stressful. And we started to think, well, you know, what could we do? You know, if we, and, you know, how could we change this if we wanted to? And we came up with the cockamamie idea of literally kind of abandoning our life as we know it. And what I like to say is retreated to cheaper ground. We moved from Los Angeles to Florida. My partners very graciously cashed me out of the business. They're still doing it and they're still doing well. And we just kind of re-engineered a life so our overhead was way less, so that I could work way less and my wife didn't have to work at all. And we could, you know, devote more time to our family, you know, because that's what we decided we really wanted to focus on in this kind of, you know, next chapter of life. And we started to kind of define a little bit about, like, you know, what we think about life and, you know, how it kind of works and how it worked for us. And a lot of times in life, you know, not a lot of times, I think pretty much all the time, we're kind of pitched what we call like a three-act life structure, if I may use the filmmaking, you know, analogy, which is basically you're born, you get educated, you know, roughly ages 1 to 20. Then you work for 40 years, you know, hopefully 20 to 60. Then act three, you retire and start your slow ascent to death, basically. And we're like, well, I don't know. That's okay. But I'd rather be a little bit more vital while not having to work so much, you know? So we kind of invented the system of the four-act life where, you know, you do the 1 to 20 education, you work super hard, 20 to 40, but save a lot, be strategic, you know, really put your mind to the fact that you have to prepare for your own retirement in your own future, and no one's going to really do it for you, and you can't just stick your head in sand. And hopefully that goes well. And then you actually have enough money where you can, what I call downshift into more of a part-time work situation, where you're not particularly old yet, you know, you're older, you're in your 40s and 50s, but you can enjoy a little bit more life while, like, I guess, you know, kind of say you're more vital, you know, or was eloquently put, I feel like, in a blog post, before you have sausage legs. You have to wear compression hosiery. And then, you know, 60 to 80, after you've had your act three, now you move on to act four and hit the rocking chair and, you know, just cross your fingers.
That's really, really intriguing. Tell me some of the things that you guys, strategic decisions that were difficult in that process for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for us, I mean, when I say, again, back to the logistics thing, like, I'm not above putting, you know, any concept into the logistics aspect of this. And we decided to have kids late because we wanted to accumulate more money and be able to devote more time to our careers in those vital working years of 20s and 30s.
Right.
I think what I know about kids now, if we had had kids in our 20s, that would have derailed a lot of the time, you know, we spent building our career, building the business, and all those things allowing us to make more money and save more money by having a kid earlier. Now, a lot of people think that's weird and you probably shouldn't co-mingle those things, but, like, I do because I guess I'm a little bit weird, you know? I mean, I think, like, engineering your best life, like, it's some big decisions. It's not, like, you know, little minor things. It's, like, significant stuff. Like, another thing that we were talking about before we get on the air here was, I think you should marry a bookkeeper if you can. Like, your parents were right. You know, like, you need to actually think about your financial future in your mate selection process. Now, that's not to say you should, you know, forego love and all that. But, you know, it's like I say to, you know, because I coach a lot of people now, if, like, you and your spouse both know that neither of you want to do the finances, well, you need to pay someone to do them. Like, it's so important that you are in the know about your personal financial situation, you should be paying someone. But, you know, again, if you had each married, you know, someone that was interested in doing your family books, then, you know, you would have saved that money, but you didn't. So there you go.
Yeah, that's really, really intriguing. Let's get on the topic of money and tell us what semi-retired means for you now. Because I know you spend a lot of time, like you said, coaching people on financial matters.
Yeah, so semi-retired for me means kind of two things. One, I am able to cover my monthly expenses, you know, working part-time, right? And the way I'm able to do that is I have some passive income sources that I'm putting towards my monthly expenses. And then, you know, what is not covered through that, I'm covering through my consulting work, you know? So I kind of switched my career from owning a business. And, you know, I did a lot of things in my business, but one of the things was I was the CFO and I managed the money because it was just, again, always something that I was interested in. And I really believed it was critical for the success of our business that I, as an owner, manage the money, look at it weekly and, you know, make it a very, you know, religious part of my, you know, weekly practices. But I'm quite good at that. So it turned out, you know, after I left LA and kind of was, you know, figuring out, well, what can I do to do this part-time work that's going to fill in my income requirement gap? a lot of friends actually. Well, actually, what happened was my partners originally was like, hey, okay, you're going to leave and we're going to miss you, but maybe you could just like stay on and do the finances from afar and we'll just like pay you, you know, a consulting thing or something. And I was like, yeah, sounds great. Well, once I told other folks that I know that own businesses as I'm doing that, they were like, oh man, we need that. Like, we need someone that can do that. Like, that's really good, but we can't afford to pay them full time.
Right.
But we could afford to like pay you like part time, you know? And so therein lies, you know, the fractional CFO work that I've done. But it's pretty good paying work. And I don't have to do, even with all my clients, like I don't work full time. So that's part of the part, the semi-retired. The other part is that we're able to mass enough, you know, in our, you know, act two or working in accumulation phase where I don't feel the need to save more money for the future. Like I feel like my pot is good enough. And if I don't, you know, burn any principal off that, and that just keeps growing through my investments, that really I just need to pay my kind of overhead right now. And I don't need to worry about saving more. Now, that's not to say I won't save more if I can. I certainly will, but I don't feel like I'm under the gun to have to do that. Oddly, the consulting thing is actually working out pretty well, and I was able to save more money last year unexpectedly. But when I set into this, like I didn't feel like that was a requirement, and there you go. So that's my semi-retired state, just basically a downshift into working less hours, less stress, less pressure in terms of insane deadlines and all this sort of stuff.
Right.
So I don't have to basically constantly call home and be like, I can't make it home again, you know, because I got to do this, I got to do that. The clients are on my case. You know, I can basically, you know, truly call their shots. Even when I own a business, you call the shots, but you still got a boss. You got your clients, your boss. Now, like I'm just in a scenario where my work, it's not mission critical, like on a timeline. Like as long as I get what I need to get done in the week, like no one's even calling me. I'm usually calling them being like, dude, we got to sit down and like, look at your finances. You hired me. Like, come on.
Right.
And they're like, I know, but I'm so busy. They're like, just tell me it's good. Is it good? It's pretty good.
That's hysterical. Well, Joe, talk to us about the fractional CFO model. I know you kind of wandered into this, you know, unintentionally, but what are some things, especially as companies are scaling? I mean, how does someone budget for that? What should they be doing? Or where do they need to be, I guess, size-wise to start bringing on a fractional CFO? I mean, a lot of the projects we're dealing with, especially as you're starting out scaling in commercial real estate, can be a, you know, $5 to $10 million project. Is that all it takes? What we start on that?
Well, I'll start by saying that I've kind of found that this is a good little niche. And part of the reason is, and I'm dealing with kind of smaller businesses, so anywhere from 5 to about 40 employees or my kind of companies. And what I've kind of learned is, and it kind of intermingles with personal finance and business finance, but if from the business sense, if the partners that start the firm, if none of them are financially oriented people, and there isn't like that financial partner, you know, that one of the partnership that is really focused on the finances and takes that responsibility, there's often a big just kind of gap there.
Right.
And it's hard for a smaller business that can't commit to, you know, a pretty sizable salary to get an experienced CFO kind of character to come in and fill that role.
Right.
So what I found, and the reason why people kept saying, oh, we need that is like a lot of my clients don't have that financially oriented partner that's an owner of the company. And they can't afford to like have someone good. They can afford generally a bookkeeper, you know, if that. So there's a big gap there because they're not financially oriented people. They're not really deciphering the numbers. They're not using all the data that's there to help them make better decisions. But, you know, their bookkeeper can't do that either.
Right.
And really, they're just kind of flying by the seat of their pants. Some of them don't even have a bookkeeper. Like they're not even doing books, you know, and you're like, wow, that's pretty rare. But even that's happening out there. So what I've kind of do is like I take on the bookkeeping role as well, because I'm like, people are willing to spend some money on that. So, and oftentimes consulting, you know, kind of makes people nervous. They feel like, I don't know what I'm going to get. And is it going to be worth it? Am I just going to like regret that I gave you all this money?
Right.
So for me, the entry kind of is like, well, you're going to pay for bookkeeping. So, you know, I can do that. And now I have an employee that helps me kind of do the books. But you're going to pay more for me to be the CFO character on top of that. But I very likely can actually pay for myself through the knowledge I have about running a business. And I come at it from like, I'm not like a CPA. I'm not that person that's worried about your tax return. I do help everyone get their taxes done and all that. I'm more the business owner that, you know, kind of has been through the ringer for 20 years and just educated myself on, you know, taking advantage of all the tax benefits, you know, businesses offer, looking at financials and seeing what's coming, figuring out how to like look into the future and not just only worry about the past of your numbers and do all these things, you know, that a CFO can do. And I'm like, but you're just going to pay me, you know, a fraction of what you would pay someone full time. And I end up kind of being like a part-time employee. So, you know, me and my small team, my one employee, we get all the books done and we do, you know, the reports, but then I get on the phone with everyone and I explain, you know, what we're looking at and why the information is valuable. Then of course, you know, towards the end of the year, I prep everything for the CPA. I work with the CPA, I shepherd the returns, I get all the taxes done, and basically, you know, and then they can call me, you know, anytime, you know, like in business hours, my phone's on. And anytime you have a random question, I'm like, hey, you know, we're going to buy this piece of gear. Should we finance it? What should we do? If we want to finance it, how do we get that done? You know, whatever. So that's the CFO part. But one thing I kind of like to really impart on my clients when I start working with them is that, well, you're a business owner, but you're doing this to ultimately make money for yourself, right? So you need to do your business books, of course. I think everybody roughly agrees on that. Like, who would invest in a company that didn't actually do bookkeeping for their business? Right. Nobody. That would be weird. But the money is really not that meaningful until it's in your savings account, you know, until it's like officially like taxes are paid, net of taxes, like you have actually improved your financial situation this year. And you can't really know that unless you're doing books for your personal life as well. You know, I call it the business of you. It's just as important. And really, even from a tax perspective, as a business owner, like the money comes in your business, but you really settle it all up in large part on your personal tax return. And that's when you know like how much money you've actually, you know, saved this year. And a lot of people do these systems like, oh, well, I got this thing where I put 5% of every dollar that comes into this account and that account, and I got whatever. And I'm like, yeah, but none of that matters. That's all just games people play. And ultimately, I think basically gives them a false sense of reality. The only thing that matters in your life is I made this, I spent, this was the difference.
Right.
That's either what you saved or you lost. It doesn't matter if you put $10,000 in your quote unquote long-term savings account, but if you put 15 on a credit card in order to do that, really you just lost $5,000, you know? So I try to strip people away of all these gimmicks and explain to them that like money's not that hard. You don't need gimmicks. You just need to count it. You know what I mean? And like know the end result. It's like, it's not a mystery. And they're like, yeah, but I hate counting it. It's so boring, you know? And I'm like, well, therein lies marrying the bookkeeper. Or if both of you hate counting, then you should hire a bookkeeper for your personal life as well. And you can actually do it relatively inexpensively. I always say to people, by knowing your finances and knowing what you spend money on, you'll also then know where you can save. And you'll very likely save more than you spend on the bookkeeping just by being knowledgeable about your financial situation. That's what businesses do. You know,
you're convicting me here because that's been a consistent thought of mine is why don't I have a bookkeeper on the personal side? Because you're absolutely right. I'm guilty as charged. It's like, yeah, we'll take everything on the business side, make sure everything's T's crossed, I's dotted, man. It's by the book. Now the personal side, it's like, I don't know.
Like,
we spend money.
Know.
We're saving a little bit. We have enough to invest, moving on. And that's like just dumb. I feel dumb before this conversation. I felt dumb, and now I feel even more dumb having this conversation.
All right. Well, I succeeded then. I succeeded. You know, some people out earn their need to do this kind of work, you know, and if that's the case, that's great. I say to those people, you're doing well, so congratulations. But I can say with almost 100% surety, if you put time to this, you would actually be saving more of that money that you're making. And every time you save more dollars, you take off more, you know, months or days or years of work off the back end of your life. That's how I kind of look at it. So if you could save an extra $2,000 to $5,000 or $10,000 a year just by making simple changes that actually wouldn't even affect your life in any meaningful way, maybe you could end up retiring 5 to 10 years earlier, especially when you put that in, you know, invest that in something, it's compounding, blah, 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 blah. You know, and then of course, the other thing that people need to do when they're running the business of you, you know, it's like, especially if you're an actual business owner, is understanding your tax bill, understanding how you pay taxes, and making sure that you're using your business or your real estate or whatever to be as efficient as you can in taxes. And then also when you start to understand taxes, you might actually make decisions about certain investments that you know will benefit you tax-wise in the future and ultimately save you more money. So the business of you is actually almost more complicated than the business of your business. Your business is kind of simple, really. But there's more angles to be played sometimes, you know, on the personal side with real estate and with other things and so on. So, yeah, it's not that I, you know, was born and set up for this. I literally started using Quicken when I was like, got out of college because I didn't have any money. And I was like, wow, I just feel like it's getting worse and worse. You know, I at least need to know what's going on. And then I knew and I was like, wow, I wish I didn't know. It's pretty bad. But that process of like tracking things and sort of getting my head into it, that actually educated me to run a business, you know, but I just started kind of with my own stuff. And then I was always into it. You know, I read books about real estate and investing and taxes and things. And, you know, kind of it's a fun game to me, but I realized that it's not for everybody. Like it's a hobby of mine, you know, so I'm lucky in that sense. Some people's hobby, you know, is scuba diving and that's super fun. It's also kind of expensive, but, but you know, you can be honest with yourself. It's like, if I'm going to just spend the next 20 years talking about doing this and then lose all that time, maybe I should figure out a way to like take it seriously. So a lot of my clients end up, you know, they're just like, all right, just do my whole life, you know, just do everything, you know. And it's almost like if you're a high income earner, like, you know, I've lived in Hollywood and all that, and actors and actresses, you know, they have business managers, they have people that manage their personal money. So I think, you know, if you hit a certain, you know, income threshold and you are a business owner, whatever, like it really can pay off to engage someone to do that, or at least even just coach you, like, you know, like a personal trainer, you know what I mean? Like sort of keep you on task and sort of, and that sort of thing. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Joe, I've enjoyed this, man. You've given us a lot of compelling things to think about. Yeah. Lots to consider on that front, especially as it pertains to the business of you. Thanks for taking the time today to come on the show and chat.
Absolutely, man.
And learned a lot. Love hearing your backstory and how you got to where you are now. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can just go to my website, playlouder.com. It's a site where you can kind of see my consulting services, but it's also a blog. So I have lots of free information there, things I write, things other people write on these topics. I also have some free courses to kind of get you going on some of these topics. And then also some paid courses if you want to, like, you know, go to the next level and sort of get into this, take the business of you more seriously.
Joe, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. It's good to meet you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.